Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I'm really excited to have Joe Crony on the podcast today. He is CTO at Washington Post. And Joe and I go way back when he was working at Microsoft, and then he ran our product teams for a while. So I'm really happy to have you on the show here, Joe. And maybe you can give a better background than what I just gave.
Sure. And Dean, it's great to be on with you again. We got to collaborate closely years ago at Infogistics, and that was a big formative part of my career. It's really great to connect again years later on what's going on in tech, and especially some of the cool stuff we're doing at the Washington Post. As you mentioned, CTO of our ArcXP business. And ArcXP is a platform that runs not just the Washington Post site, but thousands of other media sites. So it's really an operating system for a media company, ranging from editorial tools to experiences to monetization. And in that experience layer, there's a lot I learned at Infogistics around UX design and the patterns of what's needed to delight customers. So great to be here, Dean.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, that's great. Maybe could you share how you guys are leveraging AI on your platform, and you're running some of the biggest websites out there, Washington Post and others. Like, maybe you could just share some of your learnings.
Yeah, we've learned so much, and it's been an exciting time as a technologist, entrepreneur, but also in the media industry. It's a big moment of reinvention, because it's not only changing the way stories are told and how editorial teams work, it's also changing the way people build site experiences, the developer side, but fundamentally it's changing how consumers access information. So there's this whole concept of Google Zero out there, where people used to go to Google and there was a nice symbiotic relationship between publishers and broadcasters and Google, because they would refer you to their site. That's not happening much anymore. And so almost never happening in the chat services. So there's a business challenge here that's pretty exciting too. But for us, when we started looking at AI a couple of years ago, we were pretty thoughtful about starting with what we called an ethical guidepost for how to use AI, because journalism has some core tenets. And truth is really important, and you couldn't have hallucinations coming out of ChatGPT infecting the brands of things like the Washington Post or Reuters or Le Parisien in Paris. We thought about three stages of the journey. The first was little workflow enhancements to help a journalist or storyteller come up with a better SEO headline or come up with a summary or go from text to audio. So we've got that in market today and some good reception on that front. And then on the other extreme on consumer experience, we launched something called Ask the Post, which allows you to go to Washington Post, ask a question, and work with a custom RAG model and LLM trained on the corpus of the Washington Post decades of reporting to give you a highly accurate answer. And one of the lessons there is we don't always give an answer. We had to be like, if we don't know, we say we don't know. And that was part of the brand. So it's really infected all parts of our business in a positive way.
So that's interesting. Like, how do you not know that you don't know? Because that seems complex. If you ask the LLM and you train it on your data, and like, how do you guys know you don't know?
So there's a couple different layers of that. We have guardrails in place and the kind of the prompt engineering to make sure when we query the LLM that it doesn't go out of bounds with what's appropriate. But then we have layers to make sure the response we can actually track down to an actual fact in our archives. I personally had developed some slides a couple of weeks ago for a book I read. It was a great book. It was about co-intelligence, it's called. And it's about how you have AI work and live with it. And so I was looking for a quote from that book. And I went to OpenAI and said, hey, give me a quote from co-intelligence. And it gave me one back. And then a couple of days later, I was like, I'm not sure that quote's in the book. And in fact, it was not. It had pulled it from a Goodreads summary. And so I think about something so basic as that, how important it is for telling a story, being truthful with it. So those guardrails need to exist and we programmatically select that. And then finally, there is a confidence rating that comes back with every response at a programmatic level in the LLM. So we're being really conservative about when we trust the response versus when we feel like it's going beyond what's acceptable for our standards.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's some good information. Then I think you alluded to like SEO and Google search and yeah, how that's like hurting all of our funnels and hurting all of our demand gen and everything. Do you have thoughts about that? Like we're all struggling with that.
Yeah, we've thought a lot about it in the context of media. I've thought about it less so when it comes to ArcXP is a B2B SaaS business. So, of course, we have the same demand gen and pipeline we think about. I think ultimately for media, our view is that media companies need to return to owning their audience. So, not relying on someone else to bring them their audience. I would say the same is probably true for our B2B SaaS businesses. We can't rely purely on the referral model, we have to do more engagement. More podcasts like this, more LinkedIn. So we're really reaching out to draw in that top of funnel work. That's how I think about it. But Dean, what are you seeing in your business on that front? Is that
No, it's a challenge. Like with some of the traditional SEO techniques work to show up in the AI overviews and also in ChatGPT and other LLM. So we're continuing on there. But it's like an important decision, which we haven't made, where we can shift money that we used to spend in one area to do more of creating a community, which is not inexpensive
No,
and
it's hard work.
hard and takes a long time. And not everyone has, we're a software company and most B2B businesses or even B2C do you even have that skill set? Yeah, we don't really have a good strategy.
Back in the day, we used to have conferences like PDC and Tech Ed, and it was Google always a core thing for Infragistics to get to
No,
consumers, or did you have a different model back originally?
that is true. We did a lot of events and we did a lot of webinars and or in-person events and then a lot of partnerships with like Microsoft was a great partner and doing events with them. And no, you're right. Now I reflect
I
back
think
on that.
that's what we see in media. It used to be media companies were great at owning their audiences.
Yeah.
And then in some ways, maybe we got a little lazy with Google just bringing us the traffic with some SEO keywords. And I think that's the business. That's what I see. It's like full circle. We have to relearn some of these core business attributes. And I'll never forget the tenet of delighting the customer that you
Yeah.
really brought to Infragistics. I've used that my whole career. There's something in that. We have to delight our customers, delight our audiences for that to come back. Anyway, it's a cool
Yeah,
time.
no, that's a good reflection because yeah, we did used to know how to do this. And so
Yeah.
yeah, we have to go back to some of those playbooks. And yeah, that's interesting. Now, like how are your dev teams using AI?
We're using it extensively. So we've done a lot of hackathons over the last year or two to really get familiar with the technology, the terminology, how to use we have a whole API layer we built. And we're trying to actually deploy more. We've been using Microsoft's Copilot for a long time, but that's not quite as forward-looking as some of the other tools that are out there for vibe coding and so forth. And we're finding in this moment we want to deploy those tools to our teams, but my InfoSec team is really concerned about delegating power to these agentic coding platforms and making sure they don't impact production environments or don't go beyond the core SDLC. So that's where we are in that moment, where our teams are experimenting with it. We've delivered AI features and have our own RAGs. And I chose not to do my own LLM. That's for the big guys, as far as I'm concerned. But everything above it, we've built. And my hope is that the teams get to use it more and more. I think in practice, the biggest spot it's lit up for us is in tools like Datadog and observability. And if there is an incident, using AI to help us understand that. So it's less on the coding front, more on how we run our SaaS business.
And then how do you look at, you read the media and certainly the best first use case of AI is writing code, but like I always try and get this message out. Please study computer science. Please study engineering. It's not true. The tech is not taking over everything. And not only that, we need critical thinkers. And so you're going to work with AI, but it's not replacing, like we deal with complex systems. It's just not going to take it over. And I don't know. What are your those that those my messages. Like, what do you think?
Certainly not overnight. I have a degree in computer science, so that's my kind of first love, and then the business side as well. So like I see both angles. I guess to make it real, my son is entering his second year at Cal Poly studying computer science.
Yes.
He called me up 6 months ago, midway through his first year. And I was very familiar with his courses because his courses are the same ones we took years ago, Dean. It hasn't changed the curriculum that much. And he said, "Dad, I'm worried there's not going to be a job with these
Yeah.
coding platforms. What do I do?" And I said, "Well, your job's going to be very different, that market from what I had back decades ago. So you should become an expert at using these tools, but do it in a way that you've paid attention to your data science, your algorithms, the core fundamentals of computer science, so you can actually use that in a responsible way." And that's what he's found. Like he's got three or four vibe coding tools out simultaneously on the same code base. So he's great at that. But he's learning kind of the core fundamentals to understand when it's going off track and when it's not. So I think I really see the future there as more collaboration, less replacement.
Exactly.
And but it is going to require some new skills. I don't think the computer science curriculum of today really has been optimized yet to rethink what it's going to look like to develop enterprise apps in the future.
Yeah, I love that answer because I align with that answer. It's like you're collaborating with it, you're working with it, but if you don't understand algorithms and data and integrations and critical thinking and all these different things that engineering teaches you to do, like you just can't let the AI go do its thing. It's just like another person on the team, and you just don't let everyone just do what they're doing. There's process and architects and and then we all have these huge leg or the enterprise has huge legacy code bases and but yeah, so I'll help get the message out. We need engineers,
We definitely still need
studies.
it. And maybe the way to think about it is, and similar to journalism, AI is really great at writing stories too for media. And so some look at that and say, "Oh my gosh, we're not going to need as many journalists." To me, I see an opportunity to tell better stories, to tell stories you could never before because you're not spending so much time copy editing. The same is probably true for engineers. Will AI be able to do automated unit tests? Probably. Are unit tests the most exciting part and key part of enterprise software design? No, it's much beyond that. So I think it's engineers will be able to do much more cool stuff and challenging stuff, while AI fills in the parts that probably, if you reflect on, are a little tedious and not at the core of the art.
I love it. And what does people like at the Washington Post, what is their point of view, what you just said? Now we can write deeper, more stories, and it's not a replacement of our journalists and
Yeah, it's interesting. ARC, we serve many media companies, including the Washington Post. Each one has a different take on how to use AI. We have some customers outside of the Washington Post that are doing a lot of generated content, and then reviewing it later. We have other customers that are refusing to use AI at all in their workflow because they feel that's too risky. I think the Washington Post is somewhere in the middle there. And certainly the consumer experience asked the Post, we've leaned in and led in the industry in that consumer experience. But in terms of the truth of storytelling and reinventing media, we see the need for AI, but a responsible use of AI. And so I think that's really, it's a similar collaborative mindset that I think we hope to see. But this is a live experiment, Dean. There's
No
not
doubt.
one view across our journalists or our leaders. What there is a view is there's an imperative for change. The world is changing and we need our businesses and the way we tell stories to keep up.
I love that answer. I love the collaborative. I love that it is all real time and we're all learning along the way, but I think it's gonna unfold where, humans and tech working together to produce good stories, produce good content, just produce good innovation. And I think there's like a little bump in the road where maybe next generation of people will figure that out because we need more people. And at least in the tech space, we don't have enough software developers.
No.
The backlog is never ending. And now with how you can build intelligence into solutions, the opportunities are even grander. And like I always like to say, look, the market for B2B tools, SaaS tools, is like 480 billion. With building intelligence into it, it's almost 11 trillion. There's so much more opportunity, but the AI is just not going to build the AI. You need people in there innovating and working with it. So,
There have been thought leaders saying that SaaS is dead with this revolution. It sounds like you're not in that camp.
I don't believe that. First of all, just quantifying SaaS as SaaS. No, everyone's going to evolve. It's what are the customer problems? How do we deliver solutions? And now let's add intelligence into that. So we, if you're just going to build a productivity app and take data in and manage it and give it back out, that's dead, because there's so much more opportunity to solve problems now that we can have intelligence to build in. So if you say SaaS is dead, that's just maybe thinking, okay, yeah, the new way we build software is still understanding customer problems. And then now we can build intelligence into the app to solve more of the problems, which we couldn't do in the past. So yeah, it's dramatic to say SaaS is dead. No, it's just evolving how we solve problems.
And if it didn't evolve, maybe it is true that the simple CRUD applications become fully commoditized and low value.
Yeah.
Just like in media, if you're doing automated storytelling, it has no value at the end of the day. If any LLM can spit it out, like, you're not going to make money there. So that you have to do some more high value, either SaaS creation or content creation is the worlds I'm seeing unfold.
Yeah, it's like the tech is so amazing and the hype is too much. So it's like both. So you don't want to talk bad about the tech because it's so amazing what you can do. But then the hype is getting away. People want sensational headlines. We're going to have our first solo billionaire run company. I don't know about that. That's now, can we build a whole bunch of agents and agentic, which, by the way, we're all building, but there's not a lot deployed yet.
Nope.
And there's a, because it's hard to do and it's not working a lot. And yeah, we will get there. But now how, oh, you're just going to have all these agents do everything for you. Yeah, that's the vision of the future. But then there's reality where we are now.
And I think some of, the agentic term gets thrown around. Almost no one's there. We've got agents that kind of do basic functions. Sometimes I wonder if that view that you don't need employees in the future is taking the easy way out. Because our view of agents and agentic workflows, the hard part is that human to agent collaboration. That's also where the magic's created in the value.
Yep.
So I definitely am not in the camp of viewing the world as a future without employees. I think that's a very simplistic view of things. And maybe that's the most achievable route for some of these startups out there, but not the one that's going to endure.
Yeah. And so I really align with that thought as well. It's just more people on your team. Yes, certain things are going to have to do less of, but then you're going to be able to do higher value things. And yeah, so it's, yeah, we need to tell a kind of a truthful story of where things are at, because the indirect consequences of people believing some of this stuff, it's not good.
Well, yeah, if we see a decline in enrollment in computer science curriculums, like, that's not good for our industry overall.
Yeah, and it's happening, because I think it was an MIT study or how entry-level workers is down 6% in software development. And yeah, there is, that may be true data and that is an impact, but as people start to realize of where things are at, they'll realize that, yes, we still need people. We need to bring people on and we need to use the tools and leverage the automation and the intelligence, but it's not all or nothing. It's not, the pendulum is not going to go away here.
In that career transition, though, I think is real. I worry about students and the internships that are available and their route to learning in virtual and on peers. I think there's going to be a big societal change as people find the new way to work. And I do often think of these tools like the best intern you could hire that's straight out of college that can do some basic skills but has no wisdom. And if we really do replace that need in business with agents and not those students, there's going to be a gap for them to jump across.
Yeah, that is real.
That's a real challenge, I think, that we're going to face as a society and the technology leaders.
You know, hopefully people will listen to what you said in the beginning that you told your son, because that was great advice. You need to learn to work with the tools. You still need to learn the fundamentals and then build on that. And then everyone can figure out things as we go forward and have more innovation. And I think that's, hopefully people will really.
Hopefully. There's nothing more hazardous than giving advice to your kids, Dean. That's part of being a parent, but hopefully it works out all right.
One thing I found is they never want to give you the satisfaction that they heard you or agree with you. But I found out now that at least my kids are in their late to middle 20s. I hear some of the words I told them when they were youngsters. So I think they do listen.
I appreciate that hope. I've got three teenagers now. My youngest just turned 13 yesterday. So I'm fully in the teenage years.
Oh, man. That's rough. And what question didn't I ask you that you wanted me to ask that you wanted to share?
I think a lot of the work that you've done over the years and more recently at Infragistics is on that entrepreneurial angle, introducing new products to market. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on how AI and these new tools impact new ventures and entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I just think it's an incredible opportunity because what I said earlier in our conversation that it's no longer just about automating problems and solutions. It's about actually executing on them. And I do believe in agentic ways of doing things, but building intelligence into the app. So the opportunities for entrepreneurs to create amazing solutions and good businesses is even bigger now. I've never Because I've also been part of this a long time, 36 years, and so I love tech change and innovation and all that, but it is an amazing time now.
Yes.
The opportunity is tremendous. Like when you can build software and solve problems with intelligence now that you can actually not just tell them what to do, you can solve those problems and execute on those problems. Yeah, it's an amazing time to be an entrepreneur or in tech just to solve problems out there.
I mean, that's why we're in this industry. It's always changing, and this wave of AI has really brought new energy to my team, I know. And it's cool that way. I guess a follow-on question, as you're innovating, UX is very important. I know that's near and dear to your and your team's heart. What do you think about the UX experience of AI today? This whole chat interface looks a whole lot like MS-DOS to me. If I go back in the back a long time ago, voice is a cool interface, but what are your thoughts on how the UX of AI evolves?
Yeah, I think you still need data on the screen. Voices, you should have a voice interface instead of typing for sure. Yeah, the user experience of chatting in there is good, but then you think about, okay, what am I working to the left? So how do I integrate intelligence on the right to whatever I'm working next to that? And so that kind of interaction there is pretty important. I think how, like, just putting out a lot of information, you've got to be very thoughtful. Now it's not just UX in the element design of workflows and screens, but in actual words. How can you say, okay, I'm thinking, you want to give feedback while you're thinking, while you're actually doing something agentically or just asking information from the LLM? So I think that the UX now comes into like, how can you be verbose, but not too verbose? Keep the user informed what's going on, give them links and information as you're answering. So it's a much more collaborative user experience of how you do it. And so those are some important new kind of patterns you need to think about.
Yeah, I'm excited. Just, I think you're spot on there. I don't think anyone's quite solved it yet. The two-pane model is definitely, you're seeing a lot of people do it. I'm hoping for some innovation in that UX.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll keep an eye on what you're doing there.
Yeah, we're working a lot on that. Yeah, we're you'll probably have to check out what we're doing around analytics. Like we're connecting to all kinds of SaaS systems, big data, spreadsheets, and doing conversational analytics, which is really hard, where we can dynamically give information, build filtering and widgets and dashboards that you can see and visualize the answer from a business point of view, but also creating trust. So like when people ask for business information, you don't always trust it because it's an AI. But and so we're also very thoughtful about how did we calculate something, what data sources did we use to build trust in the answer to the end user. And but it's hard. Like it stuff just doesn't just work.
No, on the surface it does. That's one of the lessons we took away is 3 years ago, it was like the art of the possible. Everyone was excited about experimenting what AI could do. Then we started learning for a year. Now we're more delivering it, but it got harder and harder. Some of those early prototypes look so promising on the surface, but once you scratched below, you realized that it didn't work. There was amazing engineering required to get a
A lot.
reliable, trusted, truthful outcome.
And then shipping is hard too because it's a probabilistic model. Like, how do you ship? Like our guys say, oh, we're at this percent accuracy.
Yeah.
Okay, what from what questions? We put this out to the customers, there's going to be different questions. And so if the first seven questions are answered, yeah, your customer's very happy. And but if your first five questions are answered wrong, they're pretty upset. It's not so easy to ship software now when you're dealing with probabilities and customer experience by giving more intelligent answers. So it's a little harder to ship now.
It is. And there's more attack vectors people can use that ask the post model we have. We had no idea what questions people would ask. And we've learned a lot by monitoring that and seeing where it went well, where it didn't, hearing user feedback. And it's amazing the fine-tuning and engineering attention that's been required to get that consumer experience to hit the mark. Trust is important in all our businesses, whether it's media or software. And I think that's what I hear from a lot of other executives is they are concerned that using these tools will erode the trust that people have in their brand. And it's held up adoption a bit, and perhaps wisely.
Yeah, the AI answers so confidently whether they're right or wrong.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why, that's where the trust comes in. And that's interesting. So you're, by interacting with your customer base, you're getting test bed information and honing the guardrails around the software that's leveraging the LLMs to deliver answers, which we do too, but we haven't shipped this piece of software yet. So we're just in with some certain customers.
Yeah, it's a big part of it, right? So there's like the DevSecOps model, like more and more we're aware of operationalized LLMs, looking at that observability. It's a new game, Dean.
Yeah, it is. That's why it's so exciting. You shared some really good pointers here. I hope a lot of people listen to this, because we need more critical thinkers out there. And then the opportunity and innovation and things we can do today are great. But Joe, thank you for coming on the show. Now, if people wanted to reach out to you or get in touch with you, how could they do that?
Definitely check out ArcXP. It's just arcxp.com. Feel free to drop me a note at joe@crony.net. And I'm sure on LinkedIn we'll be sharing this, and I love the opportunity to engage. And this was awesome today, Dean. I'm glad we reconnected.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Joe. I really appreciate it. Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data-Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at DeanGuida89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.